Is it doing it? Test, test. Okay.
Okay. It is now Wednesday, January 15, 1986. The meeting of the House Committee, please come to order. We have a quorum of the committee. We have co-chair Nilo Kopanen, Representative Katie Hurley, Representative David Thompson, and I'm Max Gruender. We have two bills that are before the committee today. The first we'll take up very briefly. It is House Bill 240 relating to the passing of school buses. We have sectional analysis. We have a committee substitute. We don't have anybody to testify. We've had testimony on this over the interim, and this is Representative Thompson's bill. What we did was add subsection E, providing for a civil penalty not to exceed $100 if the vehicle owner or a lessee, in the case of, for example, a lease by Avis Rent-A-Car, something like that, is involved in a violation of passing these school buses. And a person may not be civilly penalized if the driver of the vehicle is convicted or if the vehicle was stolen. And this language was taken from the Minnesota statute. We also have a proposed letter of intent, which should be in everyone's packet. First of all, for discussion, is there a motion to accept the committee substitute? So moved by Representative Coburn. Is there any objection to the consideration of the committee substitute? Hearing none, we will consider the committee substitute. Is there any discussion of the committee substitute? Is there a motion to pass it out with individual recommendations? Mm-hmm. So moved by Representative Hurley. Thank you. Any discussion, any objection? Yes, Representative Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd just like to state at our first meeting here, I've had the opportunity of my gratitude to you personally for the amount of work you've done in the interim and to your committee, especially your capable assistant, Nancy Bennett, for the research that has resulted in this very substitute. Very, very fine effort, and I thank you very much. I'm quite sure the educators around this state do also. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. And we thank you for introducing the bill. It's a good bill. Is there any objection to passing the bill out, the committee substitute out, with individual recommendations? Hearing none, that will be the order. Next, we have the letter of intent, which states that it is the intent of the committee that in passing the bill out, the Supreme Court specify in its court rules that there be a court appearance required for violations of subsection A or B, which deal with the passing only, the moving violation, not with the civil penalty. I note for the record the presence of Representative Vice Chair Robin Taylor and Representative Alice Hanley. Is there a motion to accept that committee letter of intent?
A motion.
Representative Kopanen has moved. Is there any objection to accepting that letter of intent? Hearing none, that will be the order. The bill will move out with individual recommendations. Next, we have Senate Bill 187, and we have several people who would like to testify on that bill from Anchorage. But before we do that, Nancy, do we have the letter of intent? I'm talking about Senate Bill, House Bill 240. Yeah, but do we have the original bill? No, I don't see the original letter of intent for House Bill 240. We need that. Neil and I need to sign that. Here we go. Okay, back to Senate Bill 187. We have three people who would like to testify, and they should be on the line from Anchorage. Do we have Cherie Jacobus, Janet Platt, and John Reese?
Yes.
Okay. Which of you three would like to go first?
Whoever has
Is that you? Well, why don't you folks just tell me what order you would like to go. We would like to move this along as rapidly as possible. Pick your own order, and one of you please commence. Cherie, before you go ahead, we have changed the numbering on this section. It is now Section 5. Just for the record, you're talking about the one that adds AS 25.23.005, construction of chapter rights of persons affected by adoption, right?
Yes, that's correct, Representative Cooper.
Okay, and just for everybody's information, we can refer to that as Section 5. Please go right ahead, Cherie.
Okay. In that section, there are two parts. I first like to address the second sentence, which talks about due regard being given to all persons affected by adoption. And just on the lighter side, I know that Representative Gruber explained to me that that language had come from a New Jersey statute. But frankly, as one of the members of our law firm just told me, the only thing good that New Jersey has spawned in recent years is Bruce Springsteen. So with that aside, I'd rather go on to what I see as the problem with that section. It was probably a well-written for those people who are not dealing with the court system, but the court system has been to see things differently I think it should be dropped out. Anytime we give the courts more latitude, sometimes they do things that you and I never anticipated doing. Well, Janet is concerned about the effects on the natural parent and the possible abrogation of the natural parent's rights. I'm concerned about these. I'm also concerned about the effect on adopted parents, because when you have something as nebulous as best interest of a child involved, the courts very often interpret that the way they mean it to be interpreted, and not necessarily looking at it from the child's point of view, and they could put more onerous conditions either on either the natural parents or on the child, the adopted parent. This whole section probably well meant. I really think it should be dropped out. I've talked to a number of other attorneys in the adoption practice, and they share the same concerns that I have about this particular section. But other than that, I think the proposed changes to the statute that have been drafted are really excellent and should go forward. I really don't have anything else to say about that. Matt has, Susan Representative Bloomberg has all of what I said in writing already in a letter.
Yes, we're giving out the letter, your letter now, Cherie. Are there any questions of Ms. Jacobus by any members of the committee? Representative Thompson. By the way, I'd like the record to reflect Representative Pettyjohn is here. We have every member of the committee here now. Representative Thompson.
Thank you. No questions, Mr. Chairman, except just a comment that having been born and raised in New Jersey, nothing that happens there surprises me. Thank you.
Can I answer that? I just want to say that I have family that comes to New Jersey, too, and it was meant as a joke and nothing more.
Are there any other questions of Ms. Jacobus? Just for your information, what we had prepared since you and I talked was a new letter of intent to accompany that section, and I would refer the committee to the document. Has everybody received a copy of this, the letter of intent? It's dated January 15. Let me read it to you folks in Anchorage. Section 5 of the bill is identical to New Jersey Annotated Code Section 9:3-37 and is similar to California Civil Code Section 232.5. It makes the adopted person's best interests legally relevant at all stages of the adoption hearing, while giving due regard to the rights of the other parties. Under present law, the child's best interests may not be considered in determining whether to dispense with the natural parent's consent, citing two cases, DLJ versus WDR, an Alaska case, and SMK and ANK versus RGG, another Alaska case. The intent of the section is not to abrogate the parental rights doctrine, but to focus the court's attention on the detriment to the child rather than simply the unfitness of the parent, citing a California case, adoption of DSC, which is a California appeals court decision. And then we have a couple of other provisions in the letter of intent that don't relate to this particular section. Are there other questions? Co-Chair Copeland.
Yes, I'm just wondering about the comment on Indian adoption, since there is in the Indian society is actually a fairly well-defined responsibility for the child that is quite different from Western society. The matrilineal society, such as Lincoln, Ida, Kim-Chan, and as a fashion, the defense line, the responsibility for the male child goes to the mother's brother and is carried on through the eldest brother and so on. It isn't a general community responsibility, but within the mother's lineage. And it would seem that we would have to provide for that if it's an understood kind of responsibility. It's actually a greater responsibility than actually the male parent.
Thank you. The way I would like to proceed with this is to listen to the testimonies of the three witnesses and then to indicate for the committee what my feeling was concerning this section, and really leave it up to the committee what the committee wants to do. And then once we deal with this one section, which is the point of controversy, I'll go through the rest of the bill. We have Ed Hine here, who's from legal counsel, and The rest of it, I think, is fairly non-controversial. But let's take the other witnesses since you folks have been kind enough to come down. Janitor John, who would like to testify next?
Matt, I would like to testify next, if that's possible.
Certainly. This is Janet Platt, PLATT, another Anchorage attorney. Please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the committee, I also would like to offer testimony urging the committee to really in whole Section 5 of the proposed legislation. I am a partner at the firm of Kellicutt & Jones. I practice primarily in the areas of family law, and in addition to my private practice, I have had a state contract where I have acted as the guardian ad litem, protecting the best interests of the
Thank you very much, Ms. Platt. Are there any questions before we get to Mr. Reese? Representative Thompson, why don't we hold your question as Representative Taylor will answer that. Representative Thompson has a question on the policy behind the use of the term 17 years of age as far as the triggering for the natural parents' release of the information. And we'll have, I also want to go through this on a section-by-section basis, but because these people were here to testify, I wanted to be sure that we focused in on their concern first. John Reese, would you like to testify?
Yes, thanks, Mr. Chairman. For information of the committee, I'm in private practice and actually have been for many years and do a substantial amount of domestic relations work and have represented a great many children as an attorney ad litem in hotly contested cases, which frequently seem to get to the Supreme Court. I have gone through this bill and substantial parts of it are greatly needed, and just because I don't mention them, I would like to say now that I think the bill is very important and very good. I have some problems with it, and I'll spend my time on that, and if there are any questions or anything that any of you feel need further elaboration, I'll be glad to do that. Just going through it in order on page 3, the section 4, the real section 4, having to do with access to adoption information. I agree with Ms. Platt that this seems to be backwards. I think this information needs to be available. We've all heard of cases where adopted children are searching for their parents and other issues, even medical issues, which come up from time to time and make that an important issue. However, adoption, since they have been created in the law over the years, have traditionally involved substantial amount of confidentiality. Some of the worst stories about post-adoption events are natural parents discovering where the child is and causing the adopted family problems or stealing the child back and that sort of thing. Two things that could be worse for a child and for a family than that to happen, and that's all tied in with the confidentiality issue. There are extremely strong issues of personal feeling involved in consenting to an adoption if you're the natural child or natural parent of a child. Strong feelings about having a child who is your child but is not your natural child. And as the child is adopted, there are very strong feelings involved in that. And the confidentiality that surrounds all of this, I think, needs to be respected. To change this is a very substantial change in the law. I think that it would serve the public best if the disclosure of information relied upon the consent of everyone and not upon the failure of someone to keep safe bureaucracy informed of their address, or failure of someone to answer the mail promptly, or failure of someone to even remember that they were supposed to do something 16 or 17 years later, or something else that happened. That's not the way people think. That's not the way people act. And I don't think that just failing to notify somebody or failing to answer a letter should be enough to turn the tide on the what would otherwise be the anticipated secrecy of the proceeding. I think that's backwards. If the consent is there, certainly the information should be given. If the consent is requested, say, by the child, I think the state bureaucracy should try to find the natural parent and find out if they would consent at this point. But if they can't find them or if they don't consent, I think it should remain as it was.
Yes.
There may very well be reasons to have exceptions for medical information being shared or something like that, but in general, I think the burden should be whether a consent has been actively given rather than whether the person can be found or not.
Representative Taylor had a question.
Okay.
John Reese.
Yes, John, it wasn't really a question, but this state that we're at right now. I suggested this as a compromise basically between the two factions, and it was accepted as such. Like you, I'm not pleased with it and wasn't at the time. Do you have suggestions on how we might modify this provision?
I didn't present a specific language, but it would be in the provisions that essentially make consent occur by default if it's requested and nothing happens. I don't know which section that's in.
Well, before we take more questions, John, why don't you just continue with your testimony in chief, and then what I would like to do is go through on a sectional basis so everybody can see what we're talking about, because this bill, frankly, this is the second time this committee has had it. It went through this committee to the Judiciary Committee and resided in the Finance Committee over the interim, and because we made so many suggested changes, they sent it back to us. Finance has not had it. This is the second referral to the HES Committee. Why don't you please just continue with your testimony, John?
Okay. Second issue is the Section 5, the insertion of the best interest of the child into the relevant factor in the consent stage of adoption under the Uniform Adoption Act, which Alaska has our adoption law, a couple of minor changes. The format of that act is the initial stage, in which you find out if the natural parent's consent or not. If the parents of the child don't agree that the child should be adopted, there's not going to be an absolute. And that, of course, is not unique to the Uniform Adoption Act. That's basically the way adoption can always work. The second stage is if there is consent or if the consents are dispensed with in either case, then the court has to decide if this particular adoption for this particular petitioner should be granted. And the standard there is whether it's in the child's best interest to grant that adoption. You could do away with the consent requirement for both parents and still find that this adoption petition should not be granted for this particular petitioner. He or she is not the best person, or this couple is not the best couple to be established as parents of this child, even though the parents either agree to it or are in no position to object. If we insert best interest of the child into the consent decision, we're really confusing matters. I talked at length with you, Chairman Gruenberg, about this, and I have done some research on my own, and I still
Sean, this is Max. That language was in the is in the present law. You would recommend striking the word legitimate?
Right, and I believe you will have, not necessarily on this committee, but another legislature will have some proposals this year concerning issues of legitimacy and illegitimacy that appear in the statute. I just noticed that as I was reading through here, and didn't want to pass up the opportunity to throw a little bit of gasoline on that particular fire. The open adoption provisions, I think, are excellent as well. We've got a situation now where it appears that the Supreme Court is not going to allow open adoption based on the interpretation of the present statute. And I think that needs to be changed immediately. There are many cases in which an adoption seems to be appropriate and in the best interest of the child, but consent cannot be obtained from a natural parent, and there's no way of waiving that consent. And that consent could be obtained if it could be traded for visitation rights. There are cases of late, it might be the New Jersey case that was mentioned that talked about the father, I believe in that case, agreed to an adoption because it was a good thing for his child, but he had a good relationship with the child, and that should be continued, and they, New Jersey Court, I believe, approved that ongoing visitation. I can't think of any reason not to allow that. Still, the court's decision as to whether the visitation and so forth is in the best interest of the child. But if it is in the best interest of the child, there's certainly no reason not to put it in there. Whether it should be done in this way, the section we're looking at on page 9 of the draft, right at the very top, you create a term called open adoption and then define it. I just, from a drafting point of view, I wonder if it might not be easier just to say there's nothing in this chapter means that that we're not allowed this thing to occur by with a natural parent after an adoption. Just saying that without trying to define a term. It sounds a little bit petty to mention that, but I know that I have dealt with, and many other attorneys have, the problem of clients dealing with joint custody issues. Now, joint custody in the minds of many people, many non-lawyers and many lawyers for that matter, has some sort of a specific meaning, when in the law, it doesn't really mean much of anything. And then under lapse of statutes, we have sort of terminology that uses, I think the word is shared custody. I think that it's the use of those little magic terms that caused more confusion than not. Other states have laws that are generally called open adoption laws that are not necessarily going to be the same as Alaska. I don't think we need to create any more magic words unless they're really necessary, because we're not dealing with anything particularly unique or very precise meaning. I don't see any reason to put a label on it. Why don't we just say that post-decree visitation with a natural parent is okay, and just leave it at that. Finally, I guess that covers everything that I thought of with a substantial importance in here. Overall, I think the disclosure is pretty good. If the burden is placed on there being consent rather than letting the lack of consent turn into consent, and particularly the section about the best interest of the child at the consent stage of the adoption, I think that's going to cause a lot of trouble for judges and for people going into court. It's going to create a standard that's very difficult to apply, and it's going to make it very confusing.
Thank you very much. At this point, what I'd like to do is to go through and indicate briefly what we did in the interim in the bill, the changes that we have proposed, and would ask that Ed Hine, if you can come on up, Ed is the legislative counsel here, to just fill in on any of the blanks here that we're working on. What we did in Section 1 was to bring the Uniform Probate Code language exactly into line with the correct statutory references. Isn't that correct, Ed? Section 3 provides some additional definitions in the vital statistics statutes because of the changes that were made in the disclosure provisions. And a lot of these were in the bill we dealt with last year. These are not anything major. Section 4 is the provision that has been mentioned before. And let me tell you, Representative Taylor, who authored this amendment, the bill provided when it came over from the Senate, and this is really the heart of Senator Rohde's bill, provided a mechanism for adult adoptees and their parents to get together. And under present regulations by the Bureau of Vital Statistics, any adult adoptee can get information on his or her family, isn't it? Joan Brooks, the director of the division, is here. And what we're doing, actually, is narrowing the ability of the adult adoptee to get information by allowing the natural parent to object. Right now, under Alaska law, and it has been the state for a number of years, that the parents cannot object. The information just goes out. And so what we're doing is saying that in order to object, the natural parent, well, first of all, at the time of the adoption, the natural parent will be informed of the parent's right to object. And that is shown on the final page of the bill. I'm sorry, page 11. At page 10, that, and I'm looking at lines 16 through 18, that they must acknowledge a receipt of those provisions and that they show that they understand the way the provisions occur. And also in item 4, lines 20 through 23, that they understand that what they must do is within a year of the child's reaching the age of 18, they must put in a disclaimer if they don't want that information to go out. Because as a practical matter, the state just cannot locate every parent who's ever given up a kid for adoption. The burden is on them to either say no or at least have their address on file. And then when the child makes the application, the information is sent to the latest address, certified mail, return receipt requested, and they have 90 days to object. If they don't object, the information is given out. And that was, I think, a very carefully crafted amendment under the leadership of Representative Taylor with the assistance of Senator Ziegler and Senator Rohde and myself. And that's the way that came about, and that was a policy decision. And my own view is I think that was a good compromise. You've heard both sides of that argument here. And on all of these questions, it's my intent simply to offer this for the committee's discussion and vote, and we'll accept any amendments. And I just, my views are entirely my own, but you're certainly free to do whatever you think is the right thing. The next information on page 4, section 510, was taken from Mike Szymanski's bill that says non-identifying medical information shall be given out so that the adoptive parents know of hereditary diseases, sickle cell anemia, Tay-Sachs, this sort of a thing. The section that the witnesses have focused on is this section 5. And to give you my reason for offering this for inclusion, it's been my feeling that in a series of cases, the Alaska Supreme Court has made it virtually impossible to adopt a child when the natural parent has objected under circumstances where the natural parent has had very little, if any, contact with the child, not as the result of somebody kidnapping the child. And the case that Ms. Platt represented the mother in, a case that was cited here, was a case where relatives kidnapped the child, and the natural mother didn't know where the kid was. There was no way she could have kept up communication or supported the child. But there have been other cases in which, the way I read it, the natural parent has just, for one reason or another, not supported and not communicated. And from the child's point of view, this has not been meaningful and certainly hasn't been any support. The intent of this language, and I haven't done a survey of the laws of all 50 states, but I know New Jersey and California have this language. And the intent of it is to change language in several Alaska Supreme Court decisions that say that the best interests of the child in that first phase of the proceeding, dispensing with the consent, will no longer be irrelevant. At least the evidence will be legally relevant. And that's my interest here is solely to get that evidence before the court on the child's best interest. Yes, Representative Pettigrew.
Well, Mac, it seems to me that maybe what you should do is to amend the standards which the court is using regarding the kinds of meaningful communications and the kind of support rather than throwing in the term best interest of the child. Now, if you think that the court has allowed parents, natural parents, to object to an adoption when they have, in your opinion, essentially abandoned the child, why don't we deal with that directly rather than kind of backdoor it with best interest of the child?
I have no objection to doing that. I was wondering if any of the witnesses would have any comment if the committee were to deal with it in that manner, as Representative Pettijohn has suggested.
Well, I think that gets right to the point. The point, at least, that you've raised, Mr. Chairman, in your discussions with me, I am not convinced that the Supreme Court has made it that difficult for those for adoptions to be granted. I would be reluctant to suggest to you that that you really do need to expand on the definitions of support or what's meaningful contact. My understanding of the cases is two cases, one in which the parent who was accused of not supporting his child had been told by the mother not to pay support, they didn't need it, and had apparently established a trust account and put all the support money in that. So I don't see how that parent could have been faulted when he came into court and said, wait a minute, don't punish me and take my kids away because I didn't pay support. I was doing something responsibly. The other case has to do with meaningful communication. And I don't remember the exact circumstances of why there wasn't any personal contact with the kids. But the Supreme Court referred to gifts, Christmas gifts, birthday and Christmas cards and letters. And if you don't have personal contact, it seems like gifts and cards and letters are the most meaningful thing you can do. I guess I don't find fault with what the Supreme Court has done in interpreting that language.
Yeah, my concern is the legal standard that they have set that in the first phase of the proceeding, the child's best interests are legally irrelevant. And that's the thing that bothers me, without getting into the facts of the cases, because really we only know this secondhand in any event. But I don't have a problem with what you're saying, Chris.
Mr. Chairman, is now the time appropriate for an amendment to this bill?
Anytime you wish.
I will move that we delete Section 5.
Normally we don't take a testimony just for the
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to bring one thing to the committee's attention and its attention of the witnesses. There is one aspect of this section which is not reflected in my sectional analysis, and which you should at least be aware of before you make any other decisions, I think. As I read the language in this section, it seems to me that this is not only a addition of a requirement that the best interest of the child be considered, but it is also a requirement that all the adoption statutes be liberally construed, which is a reversal of the current standards of Alaska, which is held that because adoption is a derogation of common law, adoption statutes be strictly construed. Now, to say that something be liberally construed or strictly construed doesn't mean much unless you have a goal in mind. And so that if you read this together, we're saying not only must you consider the best interest of the child, this would apply not only to the question of consent, but all the other statutes such as notice and anything else. And under the existence of, maybe John Reed or someone else who's more familiar with the practice of the doctrine could answer this. Under the current law, where strict construction is the standard, I'm wondering to whose benefit is that now? Is that meant to be strict construction to the benefit of the natural parent?
Yes.
Okay. So that would be an additional aspect of the section.
Thank you. We have a proposed amendment by Representative Pettyjohn to strike Section 5. Usually we would go through and continue the sectional analysis, but as long as you've made this, I'll take it now. Is there any discussion? Anybody else would like anything? Okay, are you ready to vote? All in favor? Oh, I'm sorry. Representative.
I don't know where I'm at. Your switch, Robin, I think.
I'm not sure where I'm at on this one. I recognize the need to maintain the rights of the parent, but I'm also quite concerned about seeing children left in a situation where they are not having any access or support from the natural parent, and yet are being denied the opportunity to move into a stable life setting. Instead, they continue to hang in a state of limbo halfway between the parents that are physically raising them as foster parents or whatever, and the abandoning parent who, whenever they get sober enough, decides, well, now I'm going to go see the kids. And I don't know that that's necessarily a situation we should encourage. And though it is a controversial section within the bill, I think personally I'm a little more interested in the child and what's going to happen to the child than I am in protecting that parent's right. From my experience also, and my practice has been very limited in this field, but from my experience, if you don't have the consent of that natural parent, there's absolutely no way you're going to get an adoption in the state of Alaska. And that oftentimes flies right in the face of reality, common sense. And as a consequence, you end up with tragedy ongoing, and knowing that you're in essence sentenced that kid to another 16 years or 15 years of putting up with some alcoholic derelict that couldn't care enough to even get a hold of the kid half the time of leaving society to raise. So I'm more interested in taking care of the kid, I guess, than I am in worrying about the parents' rights. I think we have adequate protection within the law for the parents' rights. And I think I would, with some cleaning up and some definitional cleaning up, I think I'd rather leave this section in than throw it out.
Let me make a suggestion to the members of the committee. For the information of the witnesses, two of our committee members, Co-Chair Kopanen and Representative Hurley, have left. They've got other business they've had to attend, and I know they're interested in this, and we're not going to pass the bill out today. We're going to continue this over until tomorrow, and obviously this is a section that is going to cause some people some thought, and with the permission of Representative Pettyjohn, what I would like to do is to hold over the vote on this particular section, that we can attempt to work on this between now and when we meet tomorrow. We will take the bill up as the first order of business tomorrow, and I'd like to work with Representative Pettyjohn and Representative Taylor and anyone else who is interested to try to see, and if it means whatever we come out with, we come out with something that we can all
live with. Can I respond to Mr. Taylor's comment?
Of course, Ms. Platt.
Thank you. Authority
Thank you. Representative Pettijohn, you were going to say something.
I want to hear my question.
I just wondered if Representative Taylor would be interested in amending the part of the bill dealing with the consent of the natural parent to the release of information along the lines suggested by Mr. Reese, so that when the letter comes out from the state to the natural parent when the child requests the information, that unless the natural parent positively responds, that the information does not go out.
Well, it's an interesting twist. I have strong sympathies on both sides of that. Right now, of course, you know what we're doing. We're sending it all out.
Yeah.
As soon as the child requests, we send out the information without even attempting to contact the parent. So we're at least forging onto new ground here. And I think that there are certain strong reasons on both sides for both disclosure and also for secrecy. I don't know that I'd be any more offended by that one than the suggestion that I made that Chairman Bloomberg liked. I think it's kind of the lesser of two evils. The difficulty that witness Reese indicated, I certainly sympathize with. How in the world to keep track of people for 17 years? I mean, I can't even remember my own address back 6 years ago. I can sympathize with that very strongly. I don't think I'd have that much objection to it, either.
Well, I might offer that. I'm going to take this up tomorrow.
Okay. I think I might have some problems with that. I'll want to talk to
sure.
with you about that. Certainly your other suggestion with respect to deleting this and putting something else in the bill elsewhere, there may be something else we can consider. My mind's open. I'd like to work with you, gentlemen, on this. Section 6 reverses an Alaska Supreme Court case that said you don't have to say on the consent form that they have 10-day right to withdraw their consent. That's the ABM case, and this came over from the Senate, this language. Section 7 says that a consent acts as a power of attorney so that the adoptive parents have a method of legal authority to sign medical releases, this sort of a thing. Section 8 is a technical change. Just to make the language clearer, Section 9 references the information that has to be given to the clerk of the court. Section 10 is a technical change and takes out step-parent, which is defined later in the bill. Section 11 deals with the notice requirements under Civil Rule 4. Section 12 says that if a kid's under the age of 10 and they're of sufficient age and discretion to have a preference, the court shall consider that preference. Subsection C was put in at the request of Jay McCarthy, the guardian ad litem, that they don't have to put the child on the stand. They can enter protective orders as necessary. Section 13 references the open adoption, and Section 14 is the open adoption section, which has been mentioned. Section 15 deals with the confidentiality of records. Section 16 is a reference to other provisions of law that may allow the disclosure of names and addresses of the natural parent. Section 17 allows, in certain cases, the court to disclose, order disclosure of the identity and address of the natural parent. For example, if the child needs a kidney transplant or some other medical emergency, that they have to get that information. Section 18, under present federal law, the Secretary of the Interior must be given certain information in Indian adoptions, the name and the tribe, et cetera. And this, they're presently doing this in the court system. This provides a direction to the court system to provide that information. Section 19 is the information that must be filed with the court, and it was in the Arodi bill originally. And Section 20 provides that the Department of Health and Social Services must implement regulations must promulgate regulations to implement the provisions of these new statutes. 21 puts step-parent as a general definition. 22 just changes the number of a statute relating to the guardian ad litem. Section 23 indicates we've moved the guardian ad litem section from one to the other. And Section 24 makes the open adoption provision specifically retroactive to reverse the effect of that recent Alaska Supreme Court case on the litigants themselves. So the people who have been given open adoptions will have those ratified, and if they, by the Superior Court, if they haven't, and it's been within the last 2 years, and they ask for open adoption, and the child is not yet of the age of majority, then the court can reopen the file upon application. And that is basically it. I think that's it in a nutshell, isn't it, Ed? Yes.
I just had one comment on Section 14. John Reese made a comment about drafting of that section, and that's Section 14 is the section that deals with open adoption and defines the term. And I would agree with John Reese's comment that from a drafting standpoint, at least, it's not necessary to introduce the term, and maybe clearer to combine the two sentences and drop out the term, unless there's some policy or other reason to introduce the term.
So what I would plan to do is offer at least two technical amendments tomorrow. One on page 8, line 24, eliminating the word legitimate, unless any committee member has an objection. Does any committee member have an objection to that? Okay, then I would request that when we come out of this with a committee substitute, that the word legitimate be removed from that. And then on page 9, lines 1 and 2, the language would be, nothing in this chapter prohibits an adoption that allows visitation, et cetera, et cetera. Would that be your suggestion, Ed? Is there objection to that? Okay, hearing none, I see that we have lost, yes, Representative Hanley.
No objection, Mr. Chairman, but I did have a question. Going back to a statement that you made about the original intent of Senator Rudy and perhaps something that Representative Taylor worked on about narrowing the ability of the adoptee to determine when that person becomes 18 and to determine the location of a natural parent. Has that been a real problem? I asked that question because I think during the interim, I met someone I had known as a fellow volunteer in an organization who was very much involved in an organization now who was helping young people when they became of age to look through these records and indeed to contact natural parents. And she proceeded to tell me of some very positive kinds of situations that came with that ability. Now, is that?
Yeah, I would ask Joan Brooks if you would come up here and thank you. And let me put this on. We have with us Joan Brooks, who's the Registrar of Vital Statistics, and if she can answer Representative Hanley's question in some detail, I think that may clear up some of the problems that have been had. Ms. Brooks?
Yes, Representative Hanley, in the 8.5 years that I've been state registrar, I have averaged 20 to 40 requests a year for original birth records by adult adoptees, so people in people or older. In no instance have I had an unpleasant situation. It's always been very happy. What I can tell you is happy on the part of the adult adoptee. What I cannot tell you is whether or not that adoptee ever found a parent. I do know that I have matched up through the mail certain natural parents and adoptees by keeping letters in the file, and then if I get a contact from the adoptee, I will offer a letter of interest from the natural mother or vice versa. That has worked a few times. I don't hear what happens later on, but I've never, in the 8.5 years, I have had a letter from only one mother asking that if her daughter ever asked for her identity, please withhold it. Well, between a rock and a hard place at this point because depending on this legislation, I have not heard from the daughter. But if I do, then I want to be sure that I am covered here by refusing because this letter is refusal. But other than that, all of these other cases have worked out very well. And the only other point I wanted to make is that in some of the dialogue here, the impression was given that we are now providing all of this information. I'm not sure about the exact quote. The only thing I'm providing is what I have in the file, and that's an original birth record. Now, most of those only have a mother's name. They very rarely have a mother's mailing address. It's usually an address for a social service agency or tax and social services. So there's very little on that birth record, but I do provide an uncertified copy of it. The majority of them do not have a father's name on it. I don't have anything else in the file. That's why I like this bill, because the especially in older records where we don't have as much, we revise the certificate records from the AT&T birth rate and some medical things about the pregnancy.
Representative Taylor. Well, first of all, did that answer your question?
I think it did. So would this particular then legislation make any change in that? It would legally then give you the ability to withhold that, but it would be the responsibility of the parent. Now, if indeed you continue to get those 20 to 40 requests, will the procedure be any different from, will you be able to still provide that information?
Well, I first have to make an attempt to find the natural parent. And that's my only concern about this whole bill, and I've been told repeatedly, don't worry, you sent out a certified letter to the address that you had, and if you get no response, you're open. I can get the information now. So, I know that I will not be able to find the majority of these parents because I don't have current address. So, what this does is this puts into the statute what I'm doing right now by regulation.
Is there 90 days here, though, then the person would, you have
no.
to wait 90 days?
The 90, that gives me 90 days, or gives the parent 90 days to think about it. You know, if the certified letter goes out, they don't have to answer within 10 days. They have some time to ponder this, because there are going to be people who do not want their personal life to make it. Especially, we're talking about adoptions that occurred in the 60s. Our attitude in the 60s is quite different from what it is now. So there are still mothers who gave up children in the 60s who perhaps are not ready to cope with it right now. But there are others that want to cope with it. We'll have to wait.
Thank you.
Representative Taylor.
Yeah. Do we still have our people online? And Sheree and John and Tanner, are you still there?
Still here.
Yeah, did you hear the comments? Could you understand or hear the things that Ms. Brooks was saying?
We can hear most of it. It was broken up a little bit.
Okay, in essence, she's receiving between 20 and 40 a year, is that right?
Correct.
And you've had no kickbacks on that so far. That may give us some indication of the magnitude of the problem we're trying to resolve here. It may also give us some indication about whether or not it's a real substantial concern that we in the legislature should be spending our time on. About whether or not the record should be disclosed. Have you had any kickbacks, John, as an example? You were the one who indicated that you felt that language might be bad, and then Representative Pettijohn, who left here shortly after made his last comments, wanted to flip it around the opposite direction, put the burden on the child to keep, or I should say, put the burden on the department and leave it locked up rather than having a more open policy. I'd really like some more comment from you on that.
Available. I would expect that very few of them are guess that was my concern, John, is that apparently from Ms. Brooks' testimony, this has been going on for at least 8 years, where anyone that wrote in could get a copy of their original birth certificate and could go about the search if they felt like doing so. For at least 18 years, then, the state has been breaking the promise, so to speak, of confidentiality that it made to people, who really knows, maybe even some of the ones I adopted. It's been out for about 17 years now, too. So I don't know. Like you, I have some mixed feelings about that. I can certainly have some strong ones and share your concerns about the privacy that the people signed up under and felt they were getting. Obviously, they're not getting it. And so we need to either change the law so as to clearly reflect that that privacy must remain sanctified, or we need to change the law so as to give Ms. Brooks some authority for sending out the information she's been providing.
Well, I agree, because she's going to be sending it out there under the statute that gives her that authority. Prospectively, I think it's a lot easier to solve than dealing with the adoption that was done in the past 18 or 20 or 30 or 40 years here.
Is there any other discussion? If not, we will hold this bill over and deal with it the first order of business tomorrow.
I just did
that. Yes, Representative Taylor, but before I turn it to you, Representative Taylor, I'd just like to thank you, Janet and Cherie and John, for taking your time to testify. And this is obviously a very important bill, and the committee is wrestling with this, and we're going to deal with these tough questions. Robert?
Yes, thank you, Chairman. All I wanted to do also is just thank all three of you for taking your personal time to get involved in this and for your assistance with us today. And hopefully we'll be able to talk with you once again before we move further on this legislation. Thanks again for your help today.
This meeting is adjourned.